Underwriting for AutoLine this week, provided by
Cars have always captured our imagination. What they look like, how they move, and the places they take us. And because you've always loved them, you deserve to love the experience of buying them.
From the AutoLine Studios, here is your host, John McElroy.
I want to thank you all for joining us on AutoLine this week. You know, before a car gets in a showroom, it has to be manufactured. Before it's manufactured, it has to be engineered. And before it's engineered, it has to be designed. And that's what we're talking about, design, from all different aspects. And joining me on today's show are Joe Daner, the head of exterior design for the Dodge and Ram brands at the FCA Group, Darby Barber, a student at the College for Creative Studies. Also, some of you may recognize her as a participant in the reality show Motor City Masters, and I never missed one episode of that, I'll have you know. And Paul Snyder, the Transportation Design Chair at the College for Creative Studies. And I want to thank you all for joining us here today.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you.
Joe, let's start out. We've got a student, we got a school, we also have a car company representative. Yeah. How hard is it to get new talent to come into the design part of the automotive industry?
John, it's becoming a lot more difficult with each passing year. It just seems to be a smaller segment of students that are out there that are basically aware of car design. I jokingly say sometimes people and students themselves think cars are designed in the back of the dealership and manufactured, and that's not obviously true. But getting them to be aware of what we do and getting them to be inspired by what we do is the first step.
Paul, you run one of the preeminent design schools in the world. How hard is it, you know, having heard what Joe just said, of getting students to come in and apply for it?
Well, we're still one of the largest departments in the school, but yes, the trend is the entertainment arts are growing. So part of my challenge is to get some of those kids who are really interested in making things, but instead of making it virtually, make it real and actually see it on the road or, you know, in your kitchen, whatever.
Darby, what got you interested in, what was it, even cars in the first place? Or, I mean, how did you end up being at CCS?
Well, I was always interested in cars. I loved cars. I would always go to shows with my dad, and I was always a drawer, and I wanted to learn how to draw cars because I just had this, like, ever since I was, like, in middle school, I had my car planned out for when I turned 16. I didn't get it. I had to work for it, but I have this passion for cars, and I love to draw, and so I wanted to design cars, and I wanted to someday have a car to see and drive and maybe own a car that I've designed is like my pretty much goal in life.
But were you very different from all your friends? Were you the only one, or did you have others who were also interested in doing that?
No, none of my, well, I have some car guy friends, but none of my girlfriends really like cars. They're kind of into horses. None of my family's really into cars. I'm pretty much just kind of my lone self, but I love it.
That's cool. That's great to hear. Joe, it seems to me that there's all kinds of design schools all over the world. It seems that the car companies are all clamoring to get new designers in there. So how do you convince students that they ought to pursue automotive design as a career?
Well, I think Paul touches on a good point there. You know, a lot of the younger generation today, they're very digitally inclined and they live in that virtual world. But with car design, you actually get to create a product. It's a collaborative effort, but you get to create a real product that you can actually drive and experience. And I think that's a great selling point for some of the younger students that they can, and a car is basically one of the largest products there are, a consumer-based product. So I think that's a good selling point. In addition to that, we basically look under we go to all four corners of the earth, basically, to different design schools to try to find new talent. There's the traditional schools that we go to, but we're also looking at other schools to, you know, get more diversity and also just find students that might be taking a different path, you know, basically. So it's pretty challenging.
Darby, one of the things, of course, is when you get into the digital world, you know, you can design things. It's done. As soon as your design's done, it's done. But as you know, to have a car be designed and then end up going down the assembly line and end up in a showroom, it's like a 3-year gap. Is that something that you found frustrating coming into the automotive business, is just how long it takes to turn these things out?
I don't think so, because what I experienced at CCS and my internships, you want to keep designing it on as much time as you can, and you're going to keep changing it and modifying that design until they tell you you can't anymore. So as much time as you can get is like, you know, give me more time. And I think that 3 years is a long time, but you can get that product to be so much better within that time.
That's right. They say the devil's in the details. But what that kind of comes back to is your initial concept. When you're first week in that 3-year process, getting that concept right. And so in the future, as you're sketching or as you're going through feasibility refinements, you can always refer back to that concept. It's like, we all agreed that this thing should be the king of whatever segment. So, you know, let's spend a little money here, take a little time there. So it certainly doesn't get boring in 3 years. Every day is a new experience.
Okay, well, let's talk about the future then. Joe, I mean, when you bring in new talent, mm-hmm. to your design studio, are you looking to steer them in a direction that you think they should go, or are you looking for them to bring in fresh ideas?
Both. I think with anything, we have when we bring in a new hire, we also, and it could be an intern or a permanent hire for that matter, a graduate, if you will. We always think that they would be a good fit for a particular brand or area of car design, be it interior, exterior. But at the same time, we are looking to kind of, quote unquote, throw them into the deep end of the pool and see how they work, not only solo, but in a team type atmosphere. It is very collaborative at FCA US. So from that standpoint, it's an iterative process, but it's give and take. We look and we see what they can offer up too.
And Paul, what are you seeing the trends in design? Where is it going right now that you think is significant that, you know, you can point out, here's what we're going to be seeing in the near future?
Well, in the near future, I think there'll be a kind of an evolution in the near future. But I think probably what a lot of OEMs are looking at is variations on this Mercedes show car that was in Detroit this last year.
You're talking about this autonomous car?
The autonomous.
Good, because you're leading me right where I want to go with this conversation.
You know, if a car becomes fully autonomous and you can rotate the front seats and you don't have to have your hands on the steering wheel at all, when you turn around, your head is right where the header is, right? So that kind of pushes that header forward so that when you swivel your seat, you don't bang your head. So then you have kind of a bus or a monovolume shape, much like that Mercedes. Just in terms of architecture, how do you make that cool and sexy, right? The Mercedes was cool conceptually, but I don't think it was a very sexy product, you know, or concept for a product yet. So that to me is a real critical sort of future investigation that we need to do.
Okay, Darby, how do you make it cool and sexy then? What would you do with an autonomous car?
Well, I think it depends. If it's going to be a full autonomous, like super future car, I don't think it really needs to look like a car, because it's going so far away from what a car is. A car is something you drive, even steering wheel, pedals, and whatnot. But if it's going to be a semi-autonomous car, then it can still be, you know, make it a cool car. You just have to figure out the right proportions for it, which everyone will do differently, I'm sure. But if it's going to be a completely autonomous car, I don't think it should necessarily look like a traditional car.
Could look like a carriage.
Yeah. You could have a whole range. I mean, I think there's a general thinking that people who are maybe possibly into autonomous cars aren't gearheads, so to speak, or maybe don't have a lot of thought about design. But I think you're going to see a range from, like you said, Paul, things that are more upright, vertical, carriage-like, to something that's low, sleek, and sexy. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of different flavors out there.
And of course, we're talking, you know, at more than a decade away before we get this fully autonomous, where you can really even maybe start to take structure out of a car. I mean, if these things are never going to crash,
right.
You know, why
they
should they weigh 4,000 pounds?
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
So, Joe, are you guys thinking? I mean, here Mercedes did this concept, and every time I turn around, it's either another automaker or even some of the major suppliers are developing their own autonomous cars or modifying a car company's one. How far out are you guys thinking about autonomy at your group?
Well, I really can't comment on the product. But I do represent the Dodge and the Ram brands, and those are probably the most polar opposite of autonomy, as you can imagine, especially if one is about muscle cars and the other is about working work trucks. But it is reality. It's on the horizon. It's here. It's right in front of us. And who's to say that maybe there is a muscle car in the future that's autonomous? It sounds very weird, or a pickup truck for that matter. But once again, I think it is something that's on the horizon that we don't know what the depth is until we truly get into it, with a multitude of companies competing in that area. Who knows what could happen?
Paul,
I think the business models are really going to be critical here. For example, I don't think the ownership model will ever really go away. I think there's always going to be not only the enthusiasts from a standpoint of wanting to own your own car, but also just the enthusiasts for the freedom that brings and just going off and owning your own vehicle, personalizing it, and things like that. And the other business model or relation to the customer would be something more like subscription, and you have a whole suite of vehicles to choose from. Yep. Today I only need a commuter, tomorrow I need to take the kids to the amusement park, so I need more of a larger vehicle for that. And then of course pay as you go, whether that would be a train or Uber. Uber is definitely appended the system here with their new just with an app. Uber doesn't own anything, they just have apps. App. So those things are really radically changing the industry, but I think the ownership model isn't going to go away entirely. I think
not entirely, but it is going to change. Darby, I'm curious, have you ever given any thought, how would you design a car that's primarily meant for sharing, where all different kinds of people would use it?
That would be interesting because, people are so different. The car would be able to have to suit these different people and what they need. Like, what about handicapped people? How could they get into the car? You'd have to really think about accessibility, what they want out of a car, what they want to, what does this car offer these people that they're going to want to share this car with other people, that they're going to want to get in a car, kind of like a taxi. What's going to make them want to do that instead of have their own car?
Any thoughts along that, car sharing and how you would design for it?
Well, I think that if the OEMs look at it from the standpoint of, they already have their portfolio of brands in many cases, but a portfolio of cars, products, that are automated and that could show up at your door with their own apps, then they don't have to be generic. Today I want to be an enthusiast, tomorrow I just need to be a commuter. Then that doesn't have to go away. And, branding is going to remain extremely important because just as some of us fly Virgin Airlines, others of us fly Southwest, and we sort of identify ourselves with what that brand means, publicly. So Cara's avatar, I don't think necessarily has to change. Mm-hmm. I mean, most people lease their Mercedes now anyway.
That's right. Great point.
And with those cars, I don't think necessarily that they need to all look like they're out of the commercial division or they... it's public transportation, but depending on who the customer is and what those needs are, you might have to tweak, your design language, if you will, to fulfill what their requirements are.
Joe, I got to believe that this next decade is going to be a real challenge. We're seeing all kinds of new materials come in. There's, really stringent fuel economy and emissions standards, and yet you represent brands that represent lots of power. And,
yes.
And how do you blend all that from a design standpoint?
Well, it's a challenge because, with the fuel economy, aero is very important. So there's a tendency to want to reduce the frontal area and smooth the underbody of the vehicle and do things like that. While at the same time, having the designer to have enough flexibility that they can make their vehicle look unique as opposed to everybody else in the market. So that's one of the biggest challenges. And then Conversely, on the interior, we have so many regulations and things like that that are facing our interior designers, the tendency is to want to push the surfaces out. Meanwhile, our aero friends want us to push the surfaces in. So that's the challenge for any of the designers and within the OEMs for the next 10 years, I would say.
And also, I mean, the brands that you work on, mm-hmm. Ram and Dodge, they're very expressive
exactly.
design.
Very American.
You can't be conservative with those brands, can
you? No, you can't. We like to challenge the unboring. Or champion the unboring. You can't have anything that's quiet or boring or dull. It's got to stand out. It's got to be very American. Chest pounding, I like to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Darby, you had mentioned coming up with cars that don't even look like cars. Can you give us any examples of what some of your thoughts are along those lines?
I was thinking kind of more like spaceship-y, speed form-like, but mm-hmm. they could still have, I mean, wheels or whatnot. Maybe they don't have wheels. Maybe they don't have four wheels. You don't know, but I think some like an inspiration of a car taken to the next level, like. Think of humanity 100 years later, what our car is going to look like, and just, you know, crazy forms and cool stuff going on in there that could just make it really neat.
I can't believe that enthusiasts who love to drive will ever go for autonomous cars. Maybe for their daily commute if it involves a lot of stop-and-go traffic. Nobody likes to drive in that. But you seem to be talking about design that could maybe even make enthusiasts want to get in an autonomous car.
Maybe. I mean, an enthusiast is always going to be an enthusiast, in my opinion. If autonomy ever comes and takes over the world, I'll go find somewhere I can keep a car and drive it. But if it can be some kind of cool experience where they don't think of it as a replacement of driving, it's separate from driving. It's more of, point A to point B, which driving can do also, but a different type that they could still have their car and be able to drive and be an enthusiast. But then this other type of transportation would just be, you know, really quick, more of like a roller coaster ride kind mm-hmm. of deal.
Paul, what Darby's talking about is interesting to me because that would almost seem to say from, let's say, 2025, 2030 onward, we're going to see a huge change. I guess the real challenge is in the next decade when we have cars that have semi-autonomy, mm-hmm. where the driver can, you know, hands off, at least going down the freeway, but then have to jump in at a moment's notice. This has got to be a massive design challenge.
Well, I think it is, and I think user interface and the way the car tells you that it's ready to be taken over manually or tells you that it's ready to be fully autonomous is critical. But you know, the opportunities that it presents are pretty cool. I was having a conversation with my friend Fabio Filippini at Pininfarina. We were talking about this kind of, you know, the iRobot scene where Will Smith asks for manual and the computer is telling him it's really dangerous and he's like, give it to me anyway. So, you know, there's that switch back and forth. You commute and then you're off into your country road for your last few miles. But what if you had a Formula One driver program the code for the vehicle and it take you on a racetrack or, you know, drive like a Formula One car. Your hands are off and you just kind of, you know, drive
along
for the ride. And that's something that they could do, you know, with all the programming for an automated sort of mode, you know, super race car mode.
Sure. Yeah. BMW, I think, has even put out videos at various racetracks. I'm remembering one at Laguna Seca, Mazda yeah. Speedway, if I don't say that. Mazda people will kill me, but Laguna Seca, I think it was at Laguna, and I mean, this car is just flat out, with four people in it, nobody driving. So, you know, your vision is already here.
Yeah,
maybe right. Not for everybody to experience, but the technology is there.
That you could develop your brand around, you know, like how would Ferrari possibly market an autonomous vehicle, because it's so much about driving. Well, what if you got to drive like Fernando Alonso or something like that, you know, or got a ride in your Ferrari driven by a virtual Fernando?
So you could see what your car could really do.
Then it would be, yeah, exactly. Then it would be, wow, I want one of those.
Yeah.
And then the counter to that would be obviously the people that don't care about driving, it's all about point A to point B.
And that's right.
And I've had discussions with some of my friends and counterparts at FCA, and you know, you think about it, a car is basically a body with a greenhouse on it, and the greenhouse is obviously so the occupants and the driver can have good visibility. In the future, if there is no driver and it's autonomous, you don't need a greenhouse. You could basically have a mattress or some kind of a more linear type of seating arrangement where you're laying on your back the whole time. I mean, you think about it, it could really radically change what we commonly perceive as a vehicle in a more traditional sense.
Sure, I see in the future with autonomous vehicles, big box vans could become very popular because you could almost make it into, you know, your own media room, your own apartment. Mm-hmm. Even I could see people living in their cars.
Yeah,
at
absolutely.
Some point.
Yeah.
Joe, since we're all talking about future design and where it's all going, are you excited about all these new materials that are coming in and manufacturing processes, whether it's carbon fiber, 3D printing? What's that open up the doors for you as a designer?
Well, I think the biggest thing is instant gratification, because in the past, you especially when we're making something in the studio, you'd have somebody in the back, you know, it's like Santa's workshop, making these parts with rapid prototyping, with working with new untraditional or non-traditional materials. We come up with solutions to problems that actually don't exist, but yet we find a way to integrate that into our process. And that's what's exciting about, not only at the school level that I see at some of the schools that I visit, but also, you know, at the OEM level. What's amazing to me is some of the schools that I visited where I see some of the departments, like interior or exterior design, like architecture, they use certain methods and rapid prototyping types of solutions that influence the automotive guys and gals. And I think that's awesome when you see that translation into another curriculum. It's pretty neat.
Darby, have you given any thought to this, all these new materials that are suddenly becoming available to automakers to play around with?
I think that'll be really cool for the future if, like, the standards for today's, you know, metal, aluminum, whatnot, carbon fiber bodies, if you can find a material that's stronger than that, but 3D printable, easier to make, then you could make a stronger car, more durable car with, you know, cheaper, easier to make materials, which I think would be really cool.
Yeah.
I think the customer is going to benefit. You know, when you think about the structure of a door, right, you have the interior door skin. Somewhere in there you have a glass that has to drop up and down, and the rails that travels on, and all the clearance zones. And then you have all the fixtures that, you know, attach everything together. And then finally you have your outer skin. Well, we've had co-molding now for a long time, but when we can do co-growing, then we won't even have all those kinds of different, clearances that are necessary. It'll just be sort of, you know, extremely compact. So the customer will have a lot more interior space. The frontal area will be reduced, and the whole thing will be lighter.
Your engineering time will be shorter because you don't have to worry about draft angles and things like that.
Exactly, yeah.
So,
Or die lock,
all that stuff. I mean, it's an exciting new world.
Well, this seems to be getting to what you were talking about earlier, Joe, of the aerodynamicists are pushing you guys to shrink things down, and the interior designers trying to push it all back out. What you're talking about, Paul, is kind of being able to achieve both of those with these new materials.
Yeah, compressing. You know, when I was at Honda, we talked a lot about man first and machine second, because it's all about the owner of the vehicle, the customer, right? So it really just takes that to an extreme where the machine itself is really just in service to your experience inside of the vehicle.
And how are you teaching your students about these? How do you expose them to what these new technologies and materials are all about?
Well, they do an enormous amount of research on their own, and so they're always bringing new things to the table, that's for sure. And what I try to do is speak to them about the design process and using those new developments intelligently so that the customer is ultimately the beneficiary of their work and these new technologies. So it's really kind of a process of doing the research and coming up with an innovative idea where, you know, the customer is then happy and then everybody makes money. And, you know, that's what we're in business for.
That's what everybody's in business for, that's for sure. And are you finding these things in school? Or are you going out and finding out about it on your own or your friends? How do you learn about new things that you might apply to design?
It's both. There's a design theory class at CCS that I took that it's an assignment to come up with these new materials that you would make your car out of, or a proposal for a design. And then in the beginning of a studio, there's multiple weeks assigned to research, and you have to research materials, customer, you know, what you want your vehicle to be like. But when you're just, you know, spending weeks researching these cool materials, you can find so much cool stuff.
Yeah. Joe, same thing. How does your design staff keep focused on the future?
They do a lot of research, a lot of stuff I think they come across that might be casual, but they're always on top of everything, you know, including myself. We're always looking for the next big thing, you know, whether it be something that would influence the product or a new material. There's always something out there that's pretty cool and exciting.
See, that's what I love about design. You guys are always looking to the future. Mm-hmm. You're always coming up with something new. And of course, that's what sells cars. Who's got the latest and greatest and newest? And it very much is a fashion business on one hand.
Oh, absolutely.
But with that, we're going to have to wrap this up. Very interesting. I think we've got a little bit clearer idea of how you get new talent into the industry. And I think certainly some of the future things that we've talked about in materials and technology might be one way to bring them in. But I want to thank you all. Joe Daner, exterior design head at Dodge and Ram. Darby Barber, CCS student, soon to be a designer in the auto industry, I'm sure. And Paul Snyder, the transportation design chair at the College for Creative Studies. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I want to thank all of you for having tuned in.
Underwriting for AutoLine this week has been provided by...
People are going to have apprehensions about going into the dealership because it's the largest purchase they're going to make in their lifetime next to their house. So they have to figure, can I afford this? TrueCar gets to the heart of the matter. Within 60 seconds, you're going to find out what the average customer is paying for that car. TrueCar helps you enjoy the car buying process because you're spending less time negotiating price. You're going to find yourself focusing on what's the right car for you and have a lot of fun with that.
Experience a whole new way to buy a car with TrueCar.